The Spinoff Podcast Network.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spinoff. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spinoff member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
You're listening to Business is Boring, a podcast that reckons it's anything but. Business is Boring is brought to you by Spark Lab, offering inspiration and practical advice to help businesses find their edge. To hear more about Spark Lab, including details about the latest events, workshops, and business tools, visit sparklab.co.nz. And now, here's your host, Simon Pound.
You're listening to Business is Boring, a podcast that reckons it's anything but. Business is Boring is made by The Spinoff with help from Callaghan Innovation, New Zealand's innovation agency. Here's your host, Simon Pound.
Coming from New Zealand, it is so important to keep in mind that what may seem pretty niche here can translate into a massive business overseas. It is the concept of Dr. Paul Callaghan, who inspired Callaghan Innovation. This idea that 100 great companies doing tightly focused products with global ambitions could change our economy. Well, today on the podcast, we have exactly one of those companies. You might not have heard of Soft Tissue Repair, but it is big business. It's highly focused healthcare, where in this instance, a company called Aroa uses materials from sheep stomachs that were previously a low-value commodity and uses them to help provide the scaffolding for human bodies to repair wounds. It's remarkable stuff, and at great scale. More than 100 staff, patents around the world, FDA approval, and they've partnered with some huge healthcare players. The company is run from here by founder CEO Dr. Brian Ward, who started as a vet, went into Big Pharma, ran New Zealand Bio, and then got the idea to take animal tissue to repair human tissue. To tell the story of turning that idea into a great company, Dr. Brian Ward joins us now. Kia ora, welcome.
Great, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Hey, so take us back to the beginning of your journey as a vet. How did that begin?
Yeah, so I went to Massey and trained there for 5 years, did a veterinary degree, and when I graduated, I went into equine practice, so horse practice. I did that for a couple of years, and then at the time, I was flatting with a product manager who worked for Cadbury, who seemed to be having a lot more fun than I was having, so I thought there was something wrong with this picture, so I left veterinary practice and went and worked for a healthcare company here in New Zealand called Baxter Healthcare. And that was really the start of a change for me, moving from being a vet in practice to a person interested in healthcare, interested in pharmaceuticals and working in that industry.
I mean, that's remarkable, because being a vet's kind of like being a doctor, except you get no information, no one can tell you anything. You've got to work a lot more stuff out yourself. So probably, is that a head start, moving into the world of healthcare delivery?
Yeah, it was. I mean, being a vet's all about observation. I think you learn a lot of good skills around observation. And so I think that was a good basis. I had, you know, training as a vet, you learn medicine, you learn surgery. So you have a good grounding in the sort of fundamentals. So it translates quite well to people. So for me, it was a great base, but there was a whole lot of stuff I didn't know. So I was moved into a commercial environment. I had to learn a lot about, you know, sales and marketing and financials and stuff like that. So that was quite a steep learning curve for me.
And into the world of kind of big pharma. Talk me through that journey and it taking you overseas, because it's kind of got a bit of a big pharma sounds kind of like almost like a doomsday kind of, you know, big doom and disaster kind of name, but obviously delivering a lot of goodness for a lot of people as well.
Yeah, and I think that's the great thing about the pharmaceutical and medical device business is that, you know, in the end, you are helping a huge number of people, and the drugs that you get involved in, the devices that you get involved in, you know, they do an enormous amount of good. You know, often you hear the odd occasions where they don't do good, but generally, you know, they do a lot of good for people. So in that sense, it's a hugely satisfying and interesting industry to work in. So I started here in New Zealand. I worked for Baxter for a couple of years and then moved to the UK and worked for Beecham. And they were a manufacturer of penicillins. So, you know, a global company, you know, global reach, you know, fantastic experience.
What brought you back to New Zealand?
You know, it's one of those things that's typical for Kiwis. You know, we lived overseas for quite some time, you know, 6 or 8 years. And our first child, Tom, was born there. And at that stage, we decided, are we going to stay here forever? Or are we going to make the move and move back to New Zealand? And in the end, we decided to do that, and it ended up being a good move.
Were you able to bring the skills back? Like, what kind of work were you able to do here?
Yeah, so not really. I mean, I'd worked in a commercial role in business development, and, you know, coming back to New Zealand, those sorts of roles didn't exist here. So for me, it was quite a change. I left industry and moved back. And we bought a couple of clinics in Hawke's Bay. And so, you know, my goal was to, you know, work in a clinic and, you know, see how that went professionally. I did it for 5-6 years and then decided that really wasn't me and decided that I wanted to make a change and get back into a more industrial job.
And what was the path to NZ Bio?
So I, when I left practice, we moved to Wellington and I worked for the Foundation for Research as economic investment manager there for about 18 months. And during that time, NZ Bio was formed, and I, you know, knew a bunch of people that were involved in the formation of NZ Bio. And the role as CEO of NZ Bio came up at that time. So, you know, I was offered that role and then took up that role and was the CEO for NZ Bio for 4 years.
And what kind of work were you delivering there? And how did you go from what was probably a pretty good top-of-the-ladder job to then deciding to jump out into the world of starting a super high-risk startup?
Yeah, well, that's the interesting thing at that time was, it was a time when we were trying to kickstart, you know, life science companies in New Zealand, and there was groups of investors coming together. All of the infrastructure around what was needed to start biotech companies was beginning to come into place. And so, you know, as the CEO of that organization, I was involved in pulling a lot of that together. I mean, for me personally, it was great because it was a great way to network with people both within New Zealand but also internationally and help bring those things into place. So at the time, there was several companies that were formed. I had, you know, close relationships with the people involved in the formation of those companies. That was inspirational to me in terms of being on the sideline and seeing those companies being formed. And I thought, you know, this looks great. I'd love to have the opportunity to do this. So that was really the part of the genesis of the idea about, you know, around starting Aroa.
And how did you go about coming on the actual idea for soft tissue repair, which it's pretty niche, is it? Would that be fair to say?
It is niche. I mean, healthcare is a wide range of different diseases, and all of them are quite niche in a way. I was intrigued by the fact that the companies that had succeeded in New Zealand were typically based off animal resources here. And so, you know, there's been companies that have harvested animal products for a range of different uses in pharmaceuticals. So that kind of intrigued me. I'd seen publications around this emerging use of animal tissues in regenerative medicine and their ability to be able to provide a framework for soft tissue regeneration. And so that intrigued me, the fact that I was in New Zealand and we had such a large livestock industry. I'd had a background in veterinary science, had been involved in pharma and med tech internationally. So all those sort of things came together to give me the idea. And so there was a number of different tissues that were being used, and so I essentially did a review of different tissue sources, looked for a tissue source that hadn't been patented, and then worked with the university to begin to develop that technology.
Hi, I'm Russell Brown, and I make a podcast for the spin-off called Actually Interesting. Those are also the initials of its topic, artificial intelligence, which is very interesting. You can find us on your favourite podcast providers or on thespinoff.co.nz.
If you love The Spin-Off, the best way to show it is to become part of The Spin-Off members. This is the fund that helps us keep free and accessible to all without a paywall. It also funds some of our most important and acclaimed journalism. You can pay what you want, but for just $8 a month, you'll receive a package that includes our first book. Check it out through The Spin-Off.
What exactly is the soft tissue repair? Like, how do these animal tissues help rebuild human tissue?
Yeah, so we typically make products for wounds that are very, very difficult to repair. And typically what's happened is either the healing has stalled and it can't progress any further, or there's been a loss of a large amount of tissue and the body can't bridge the gap where that tissue has been lost. So what our technology does is it provides a framework for cells to move through and start to lay down new tissue. So it's an enabler of healing. And what's really cool about it is that if you process the animal tissue in the right way, it means that it's not rejected by the human immune system, and it essentially provides a template for the development of new tissue. So wounds that would previously not heal or be very difficult to heal, you can heal those wounds with this type of technology.
And I saw in reading up on the products, it's such a fascinating concept that kind of it's things like that might not jump to mind in the first instance, like ulcers for diabetic people and the like, which is... Yeah, so is that kind of what hard to treat or hard to get to means? Like,
yeah, it is. I mean, so as you age, obviously your healing becomes more impaired, and some people that have particular disease states, it's very difficult for them to heal. So diabetics tend to be poor healers. People with vascular disease, people that have metabolic diseases don't heal well either. So there's a range of people that just don't heal very well.
It's such a cool play on the idea of taking a primary industry and adding IP, and that, you know, it doesn't get much more primary than selling bits of sheep overseas.
That's
which
right,
New Zealand's
exactly.
got a bit of practice in.
Yeah.
But then the biotech edge of it. Like, are there any special applications that mean that sheep tissues are particularly good for this?
It's not so much the sheep tissue, it's the structure of and the region that this tissue comes from and what's within it that makes it good for healing. So, I mean, this particular tissue is fantastically good. And, you know, when I started the company, I had no idea of that. It's a little bit of luck. But it turns out that it's just laden with signals that attract cells, and it's very easy for cells to get into. So, you know, I started the company on the idea that this tissue might be good. It's turned out to be a lot better than I thought it would have been.
And so there's other tissues that are being used, so the area exists. Mm. But I still imagine it's quite a process to go and actually build out the infrastructure required, the science, the kind of backing even to take on this kind of idea. Like, what are people... how do you get people behind you on an idea like that?
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, particularly in an area like this, because it's a regulated industry, the time from starting the company to actually selling products it's a long pathway. So that's, for us, that was probably 5 years. So for a good part of that, you know, investors weren't really sure, is this a science experiment or is this actually building a company? So early on, it was about getting people that were patient enough that would stay the course. And, you know, we were lucky when I first started the company, I had a couple of angel investors that put in enough money for us to prove out the idea. You know, I know a little bit about surgery and a little bit of science, but I'm not a scientist. So, you know, we had to employ some scientists. You know, we had a crew of 15, 16 people in that first 5 years to develop the original technology. We had to get it approved by the FDA, so there's all the regulatory requirements that go behind that. So for quite some time, you know, there was a lot of work that happened before we really started to see the fruits of our labour. So it's a long pathway.
Does it make it easier or harder when you're dealing with tissues from one species into humans? Like, does that add to the complexity, or is it always hard when you're dealing with the FDA?
It's always hard when you're dealing with the FDA. There's a massive amount of information you have to provide to them. Using tissue from animals has some additional requirements because of, you know, potential for rejection or maybe disease transmission. So they have very stringent requirements that you have to meet. There's no shortcuts, and they require, you know, a massive amount of data to prove that your product does what it says, what you say it does.
We mentioned Paul Callaghan in the intro, and
yes,
you actually accessed some of the kind of predecessors of what Callaghan Innovation is now to kind of outsource your science. Talk me through that, because I just love this idea of, like, you have an idea like this, which is, you know, it's not a trivial thing to achieve, but being able to kind of, like, pick up the blower and call some people and get some scientists in to help you deliver it, it's quite a cool process.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, when I started it, I mean, I started it as myself and a PhD student, and we didn't have anywhere to go in terms of a lab or anything like that. So I knew some people at that time. It was industrial research. I knew some people that worked there. Had a meeting with the crew there. You know, they offered us some space to rent. At that time, we also contracted in some of their scientists. So we had, you know, two or three of their scientists working for us at the beginning there. So it was almost like we were able to pull this thing together quite simply, really. And they were fantastic supporters. I mean, they really did a lot to help get us up and going. And, over the time that we were there, we were at IRL for 4 or 5 years, and through that time, you know, they were incredibly supportive, and we, at various periods during the company's development, they came in and provided, you know, expertise.
Because is it hard to keep up the spirits on, like, a 5-year journey like that? Like, I can imagine, like, you know, if you're in the area of commercializing, you know, science, maybe all of it seems like it's running perfectly to schedule. But, you know, how many barbecues are you going to over a 5-year period, and someone saying, what are you up to? And you're like, oh, I'm finding some tissue in the sheep to fix a ulcer in America. And the people go, how's it going? You're like, well, I don't know yet.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, if you've worked at an early stage technology company, there's typically more things going wrong than there are right. So there's always things that aren't working out. And I think particularly in the first 4 or 5 years, there was a lot of that. So it just takes a huge amount of resilience and persistence to kind of to find your way through that. You know, every 6 months you're working on a new challenge. And the first challenge is just like, you know, can we make this thing? Can we make it at scale? Can we then prove it works? You know, and there's a whole lot of incremental steps that you go through, and it's not till you stitch everything together that you actually know that you have something. So that process is, certainly it's a long process, and it definitely takes some perseverance to work your way through that.
And there must be some great moments when it's working. You know, what were the points where it showed you that, like, you were on the right track?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we when you get the readout from some key experiments that you're doing, and commercially, as you're progressing towards a commercial product and you're seeing interest from commercial partners, you know, that's fantastic as well. So just a series of both technical and commercial validation events along the way. I mean, that's what provides the encouragement to keep you going.
What was the big turning point with kind of signing up your first big international player? Because I imagine up until that point, you're probably just kind of a person with some experiments going on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, signing up the first player for us was hugely important. I think, you know, for everyone in the company, up until then, we weren't really sure that we had something. And it was that getting that commercial validation from somebody that knew the field really well was really important to us. That one customer, you know, probably represented 30 failures as well, in terms of kind of getting to doing that deal. So, you know, that was a huge, for us. It was, it also was, a financing event for us as well. So it meant that, you know, it gave us the ability to live for another couple of years and make some more progress. So, yeah, I mean, it was a relief. It was a huge relief getting that first commercial deal across the line.
And when you're doing things like building out a new way, a new offer, a new product in a market, there's so much market education and so much building of infrastructure to actually do sales and support and all of that. How have you managed that from New Zealand, where you're still kind of headquartered and based, aren't you, as a company, with your major market being America and now like looking into the rest of the world?
Yeah. So from day one, really, we never thought that we were going to be able to initially build our own sales infrastructure. So our goal was to do a partnership with a large global company and for them to be the sales and marketing arm of our company. And so that, you know, and our first deal was like that. You know, Hollister was the company. They initially did a North American deal and then it became a global deal. And so it meant that we could focus on developing products, developing manufacturing, developing out all the quality part of the business that we needed to do. And then they would be responsible for sales and marketing. I mean, that was hugely helpful for us. I think if we were doing both together, it would have been incredibly challenging. You know, subsequently, we did another deal with a company for a range of surgical products. Same sort of structure. They did the commercial side of things as well. And then more recently, we've become involved in sales and marketing in the US. So that was a deal where we bought back our rights from Hollister. And as part of that deal, we secured the sales team. And so now we have, you know, 30 people based in the US, you know, working for us in the wound care business. So, you know, we've done it incrementally and sort of opportunistically in a way as well. And, you know, I think that's worked for us. I mean, it would have been hard to do the whole lot from the outset.
How closely, I always love to kind of ask this of people who have taken a completely fresh idea and taken it from, you know, first inception through to working. Like, how closely did you track to your business plan on these things? And you know, like, how squiggly has it been? Or is this kind of where you expected you'd end up, 100 plus staff, making it all here?
I'd like to be able to say 100%, but I'd be lying. Look, it's been, you know, it's kind of been roughly what we said we'd do. It's just taken a hell of a lot longer. You know, so I think you know, many of the technical and commercial challenges along the way, they just take a long time to work through. And so, it's certainly been a squiggly line. You know, we've kind of got to where we wanted to get to, but it's definitely taken a lot longer.
What's the state? Like, what's involved with building a biotech business of that capacity here with production, research and development, exporting? Are there just people you can call up to come and work with you, or do you have to kind of put the railway tracks ahead of you as you go along?
You definitely have to build the capability a long way ahead of actually needing that full capacity. So, you know, we're an interesting company in terms of people. You know, we have, I think in New Zealand we're 110, 120 people. We've got 27 nationalities. A lot of people have come from all around the world to work at Aroa. So it's a very diverse, interesting group of people, wide range of skills. Typically people have some sort of technical background. It's certainly been a business where we've had to build, you know, a lot of capability and, you know, ahead of, you know, reaching full scale.
And what are the next plans? Like, is this something where, you know, there are way more applications, or where would you like to see Aroa grow to?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so the technology has applications in many fields of surgery. And so, you know, we're in, you know, difficult to heal wounds in some areas of surgical repair. There's a wide range of other areas that we could also expand into. So we feel like we have a great foundation and we feel like we've just got started. And, you know, from the space, we feel like we can build a really large you know, leading company from New Zealand. So, you know, it's a great springboard for this platform. And I think now that we have a US-based sales organization, you know, that's also gives us distribution into America.
And what's it like for you as a leader in this? As there are hugely different draws on your experience and skills and time and challenges around getting something off the ground, getting it launched, and then a scale up like this.
Yeah, look, my job's changed every year. You know, so the first year was very technical. The next couple of years, very commercial. It's obviously, I was very focused on specific tasks then. Now it's a much more general role. So I think, you know, my role seems to get reinvented every 18 to 24 months. I mean, for me, it's been great to grow up with the business in a way and to be involved in many aspects of it. My day-to-day is not so involved now in the detail of the business, but, you know, it's a hugely interesting area. You know, the great thing about the industry we're in is there's a diverse mix of people. You're dealing with a whole wide spectrum of people all the time, and I love that. It's fun. Yeah, it's really interesting. And you're dealing with really smart people as well, so it's great.
Once something's kind of working, it looks like, you know, of course it was going to work, you know. But, you know, were there points along the way where people told you that it was not a clever idea to try this, or where you thought that it wouldn't get there?
Look, there's been a few points like that. I mean, it always seemed like it was going to work. It was more about having enough cash and being able to hang in long enough to get it to work. So I think it was always feasible. I think, you know, I think there's been a question mark around could you develop this kind of company from New Zealand and make it successful? I think we've proven that. But yeah, there has been, you know, there's been a few points along the way where there's certainly been a degree of doubt, but also quite a lot of optimism that we could kind of push through that and get done what we need to get done.
What advice do you give to people who, you know, are thinking of, because it would have been a big jump in your career as well, out of senior management and leadership and certainty into high-risk biotech, you know, startup enterprise. What advice do you give to people who have an itch to try and build a great business like that?
Yeah, it's a tricky question. I think you're right. It's very different from being in a large company, and I think it's hard to appreciate that. I certainly didn't appreciate how different it would be, you know, when I got involved in this. So when you're in a large company, you're so much more secure. You know, you get paid every month. You know, you've got a whole lot of people around you that help you with things and a lot of infrastructure that you take for granted. And when you're in a small company, you have none of that. And so it's a lot more tenuous. Yeah, it's definitely, you know, you definitely need to be able to hang in there, and you definitely need to be able to be resourceful, and you need to be able to stay positive and kind of and make it work. I think the wonderful thing is you really, it's neat to be able to see what your efforts lead to. And the wonderful thing about not being in a large company is you get to make decisions quickly and you get to see progress quite quickly as well. So I think there's some really neat things about working in a small company. And now, having done both, I'd always err towards small company than large company. I think it's just, you can be so much more impactful in a small company. And yeah, I think generally it's a lot more fun. So, you know, I would do it. I think you definitely have to be in for the long haul. It always takes longer, and you've got to be prepared for that. But it can be hugely satisfying as well, and it's fun to grow a company.
And as a final thought, something that we like to ask everyone is, having, you know, reached these milestones that must have been really hard fought for, like, what's your version of success? Like, what would be success for you to be able to look back on Aroa and see what you've made?
Yeah, for me, you know, I think it's at a number of levels. I think, you know, it's great to have been able to build a company that actually helps people and does, you know, improves people's lives. And so that's a hugely satisfying thing. I think, you know, from a company perspective, to build a sustaining healthcare company in New Zealand that goes on and continues to be successful and as a platform for, you know, future growth, I think that would be incredibly rewarding as well. So I think, you know, those two things are probably key for me.
Well, thank you so much for coming and sharing your story today. That's Dr. Brian Ward, who's the founder CEO of Aroa Biosurgery. Thank you so much.
Good. Thank you, Simon.
Thank you very much to Tina for producing, and thank you very much for having us along and listening. If you have enjoyed this podcast, please do jump on board and give us a review on iTunes. And if you have any suggestions for people you'd like to hear from, jump onto Twitter and hit me up @Simon_Pound. Cheers.
You've been listening to Business is Boring, presented by Simon Pound. And brought to you by The Spinoff and Callaghan Innovation.
From the Spinoff Podcast Network, that was Business is Boring. Brought to you by SparkLab. Make sure you're following Business is Boring wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information on SparkLab, visit sparklab.co.nz. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today. The Spinoff Podcast Network.